Supervisors will convene an open session. Council, is there a report on closed?
There is not, except for the times, which are that we went into close at 8:31. At 8:52, we dealt with a flood control item, and then we came out of close at 9 o'clock. No report to last night.
So flood was 8:52 to 9?
Correct.
And then Board of Supervisors 8:31 to 8:52, correct?
That's correct as well.
Thank you much.
Okay, with that, stand for the pledge. President Chris, will you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh.
Chaplain.
Sir. Heavenly Father, you've placed this Board of Supervisors in positions of leadership over the residents of this county. It's not an easy task that they undertake, for they're responsible for the well-being of a multitude of people. For this solemn responsibility, we ask that you fill each of our supervisors with wisdom as they serve the residents of Siskiyou County. Bless them for their service, and may they find direction and inspiration in you. We pray it in your son's name. Amen.
Amen.
Wendy, roll call.
Okay, Supervisor Chris.
Present, in person.
Supervisor Cobbseth.
Here.
Supervisor Haupt.
Here.
Supervisor Ogren.
Present.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Here.
And the board will be convening today as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and Siskiyou Power Authority, and receives no additional compensation.
So before I proceed, I guess an announcement. I've been informed that item 7K and item 10A will be pulled from the agenda, according to the clerk.
And I'll just need to verify whether those are going to be dropped completely and come back in another form.
I believe I have Jason Ledbetter on the phone.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Do we need to continue these, or are they just dropped, Jason?
Yes, hi, this is Jason Ledbetter. I would like to drop these for now, and I will revisit this with Phil Anzo from CAL FIRE and also James Smith from the Ag Commissioner's Office.
Okay, I'll expect those to come back through Questus then as completely new items, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you.
Okay. Presentations from the public. This time slots for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair can extend that to 5 minutes if it's appropriate. Written comments may be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. And when addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments, and please address the board through the chair. Comments must be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. And with that, I see no blue cards for anyone in attendance here, so I'm looking for raised hands on Zoom by pressing star 9 for public comment.
Hey, Hockaday, go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Aaron Hockaday. I'm a public member for the Quick Drive, also a tribal council member. I'm here today to ask you guys to put us on the agenda for June 18th for our lands legislation. The reason why is that we've been practicing our medicine and everything in these lands for years, and it's about time that we regulate our own lands so we can go to church without asking the Forest Service every year. It's been going down for generations, and we're just asking for you guys to support on this land legislation to be on the agenda for June 18th.
We don't have a board meeting on the 18th.
Oh, 15th. Sorry, ma'am.
Tuesday the 15th?
Yeah, June 15th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Joshua Saxon, please go ahead and unmute.
Can you hear me?
Okay, good.
Good morning.
IUP, this is Arch Super.
Good morning.
IUP, this is Arch Super. I'm a of the Cutting Tribe. I'm also a council member for the Cutting Tribe and a citizen of the of Siskiyou County in the Nancy Ogren District. The Cutting Tribe Tribal Council has districts for Wairika, Happy Camp, and Orleans. We as council represent all of our tribal membership. Our county Board of Supervisors has districts also and should also represent the whole county. It was once said by a board of commissioner or a board of supervisor that there are issues that we can agree with and disagree with, but working together should be a continued goal. I'm here today to ask the Board of Supervisors to have the Cutting Lands Legislation support letter to the June 15th meeting agenda. We have requested support for the past year, and we feel a little disrespected when we are continually denied. The sacred land that we are pursuing in lands legislation is important to the Cutting Tribe for religion, cultural, ceremonies, and language. I am a language apprentice and teacher. Language is medicine for our tribe. We have provided you with the opportunity to meet to discuss this legislation, not because we had to, but because we recognize the importance of our government having meaningful consultation with each other, as we have done with the state and federal government. And we hope you are more willing to collaborate in the future. So my request is to please give our request serious consideration and strengthen the government-to-government relations. Yield.
Thank you. Next.
Russell Atterbury.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you in advance for listening to our request. I'm Russell Atterbury. Most people know me by Buster. I'm the current tribal chairman. I'm currently going on my third term. I believe I know everybody out there. I am a longtime Siskiyou County resident. I only moved away when the economy, the logging went away, and I moved to Reading, but I love Siskiyou County. I have friends from all corners of Siskiyou County. And in April, the Cutting Tribe asked to have our lands legislation proposal on the agenda today, May 18th, but were denied. It was disappointing to hear that the Board of Supervisors did not want to consult with another government agencies about issues that would make Siskiyou County a better place to live and visit. Things like economic development, health care, and education. The Cutting Tribe, correct me if I'm wrong, is the largest employer in Siskiyou County. And we have a health clinic that is open to all Siskiyou County residents. We hope to expand those health clinics. Education, I'm the newest member on the Siskiyou's Board of Trustees. I hope to get out there in my district and entice students in Siskiyou County to attend and support College of Siskiyou's and pursue their education. Some of those issues that I mentioned are issues that we can talk about on a later date. Today, as you heard, we have a simple ask, and that is to be added to the June agenda to consider a letter of support for our lands legislation proposal. As you have heard, the lands that we are talking about is a sacred place where our ceremonial leaders practice ceremonies, including our Pikiawish, which is the Fix the World ceremony, where we pray for the healing of all people and Mother Nature. The Kurdish tribe would love to continue to consult with the Board of Supervisors in a concerted effort to make Suscopee County a better place to live and visit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Daryl Aubrey.
Hello. Good morning. My name is Daryl Aubrey. I was born in Wairika and currently reside in Wairika. My family is from the Klamath River, and generations of my family have lived along the Klamath since the beginning of time. Prior to coming back to Suscopee County, I received my bachelor's degree and master's degree in computer science. Afterwards, I worked for Google at their main office in Mountain View, California for about 2 years. I then decided to go back to school for my law degree and went on to attend the University of Iowa College of Law, or School of Law. There, I received my Juris Doctor with an emphasis in federal Indian law. It was only back in August of last year that I moved back home, and I'm currently the self-governance director for the Kurdish tribe. I'm here today to ask that the Suscopee County Board of Supervisors add the support letter of the Kurdish tribe's land legislation to the June 15th meeting agenda. Now, despite the Kurdish tribe following the appropriate procedures to get on the Board of Supervisors' agenda for a consultation, the board has refused to do so. You know, government-to-government meetings are important at all levels of the governments. It's been recognized many times over by the federal and state governments that it is crucial to consult with the tribes in order to promote regular dialogue and to avoid potential harm to natural and cultural resources. It is also validating and respecting our rights as a sovereign tribal government and the knowledge we can bring to the table. We should be strengthening our relations by having these meetings. How else are we going to have meaningful collaborations in the future if we can't establish a good working relationship? I'm concerned about how this board conducts themselves in relation to the Kurdish tribe and the lack of engagement the board has had with the Kurdish tribe. The tribe provided you with the opportunity to meet and discuss this legislation, not because they had to, but because they recognize the importance of our governments to have meaningful consultation with each other. And I hope you are more willing to collaborate in the future. And I bring this to you as a citizen of Suscopee County and a citizen of the Kurdish tribe. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, one more.
Joshua Saxon again.
Apologies, yeah, we're sharing offices today. If it's okay, I'd like to recognize Elizabeth Bentley. Her hand is raised, and then I'll go after her.
Elizabeth Bentley.
Thanks, Josh. Hello, Ayuki. My name is Elizabeth Bentley, formerly Super. I'm a newly appointed Kurup Tribal Council member for the Wairika District. I was born and raised in Wairika. I am here today to ask the Board of Supervisors to add the Kurup Tribe's land legislation support letter to the June 15th meeting. We have requested this prior, but have been denied. In my term, I would like to be able to see our community work together, government to government, in a positive way. This is very important to me because I am raising the next generation of our Suscopee County future leaders. So I'm asking for our letter of support, again, for the Kurup Tribe land legislation to be added to the agenda for the meeting on June 15th. Yotwa, and thank you for hearing me out.
Thank you. Going back to Josh Saxton.
Good morning. My name is Josh Saxton. I'm the executive director of the Kurdish Tribe. Mr. Chair, I'm here today to ask the Board of Supervisors to add the Kurdish Tribe's land legislation support letter to the June 15th meeting agenda. I'm going to describe the timeline of communication we have had with the county starting on April 30th, 2020, when I invited Lisa Nixon and Michael Kopseth to a call on May 8th to discuss a white paper we had drafted that explains the background behind our draft legislation. Supervisor Nixon attended the call, Supervisor Kopseth did not. On October 9th, 2020, after we spent some more time speaking with internal and external partners, I sent the draft legislation and map to Lisa Nixon and Wendy Winningham. On October 12th, I sent a request to be added to the Board of Supervisors' agenda to Lisa and Wendy. On October 16th, I heard back from Lisa that our legislation would not be added to the agenda. She apologized and said she didn't know why. I responded on October 23rd, asking if the county was able to articulate their concerns. On November 10th, the tribe received a letter from the Board of Supervisors with questions regarding our draft lands legislation. They requested an answer by December 10th. The tribe answered the questions and returned those answers on December 2nd. I sent an email on February 16th to follow up to Elizabeth Nielsen asking for an update on our lands legislation process. Her response was that the Board of Supervisors was not going to bring the letter back up for discussion. I responded with a request for an informal meeting to discuss any concerns the Board of Supervisors may have. She suggested the tribe write a letter requesting the lands legislation be brought to the full board, and that in the meantime, she would discuss with Board Chair Howe what next steps might be. On February 26th, I checked in with Elizabeth to see what Ray's suggestion might be. She responded that Ray did not give her any direction to bring the item back to the board. From April 21st to April 26th, the tribe attempted to schedule a meeting with the Board of Supervisors, whether informally or formally, and that was met with opposition. On April 26th, I received an email from Elizabeth Nielsen that the Board of Supervisors denied the tribe's request for a meeting. Therefore, on April 27th, the Tribal Council approved an official letter to the Board of Supervisors that was sent to Elizabeth, Angela Davis, Michael Kopseth, Ray Hout, and Laura Bynum, requesting that the letter of support for the Pettit Tribe's draft lands legislation be added to the May 18th agenda. To date, we have received zero response, nor have we received any communication requesting clarifications or asking additional questions in regards to our draft lands legislation. The tribe stands ready to engage with the County Board of Supervisors. I think that's pretty clear based on the comments that you're receiving today. Please let us know what you decide so we can arrange our schedule to accommodate a presentation on our draft lands legislation if that's what you so desire. Thank you for your time. You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
Any other public comment, please press star 9. On your phone or raise your hand? Seeing none.
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public comment, move on to the consent agenda. Discussion from the board. Motion.
Can we pull item 7A, please?
Okay.
Nothing else. We've approved the balance of the consent agenda, and I think minus whatever was pulled.
7K.
Second.
I'm sorry, and also 7C.
Oh,
I apologize.
That's okay. 7C, like Charlie?
Yeah. Second concurs.
Okay, so according to my notes, we have 7A. 7C pulled per Valenzuela, and then 7K, which was already removed. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Yes.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Thank you.
7A.
Yes, please. Could you just give me an update where we are with Public Works since it's such a significant piece to the county puzzle here?
Certainly. Angela Davis, County Administrator. With regards to the Department of Public Works, we are currently conducting a continuous open recruitment for the Director of Public Works position. We currently have a candidate who has successfully completed the first interview phase of the process, and we are currently scheduling a meet and greet for this upcoming Friday. So that this person can actually meet the department, tour the area. He's familiar with this area very much so, but actually seeing county properties and the like. So in the interim, we have to have a stopgap measure.
But that part again, I just want to know where we are. Because in my mind, when you say interim, it's open-ended, right? That there's no one in queue. That's how I interpret it. Because okay. I'm not being kept up to date on where we are with the process.
You are correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Question I have while we're on the subject. In light of the other agenda item we have later on about the qualifications of this position, do we have a vacancy also with the road commissioner?
We don't have a vacancy of a director of public works nor a road commissioner. Scott Waite is currently on payroll. He is just running out his time. So there is no vacancy. I want to make that very clear. So if his retirement date comes and we are not able to fulfill his position, then yes, we would have a vacancy for director of public works, which also includes the road commissioner. However, we do have in place a contract with Pace Engineering who will be able to supplant those requirements that are by government code. So
I just want to make sure we're covered with a civil engineer to carry out the capacity of the road commissioner.
You are correct, and we do have that capacity. We actually have that now in place with Pace Engineering. However, we do have one project in the queue that Mr. Waite is continually working on as a civil engineer. But I want to make sure that folks understand we don't have a vacancy right now for the Director of Public Works. So Road Commissioner, Director of Public Works is in place.
So if I could go back, because I was going to bring this up at item 10C, but the ultimate goal is to get someone fully qualified for the position.
100%, and I believe we will be successful in doing so. I just need to have that flexibility in case the worst scenario happens.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you planning A through Z.
Yes,
thank you.
That's what we have to do.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, to be just transparent, I'm certainly getting a lot of calls and emails regarding the operation of the health program. Item C?
You're not the only one.
Yeah.
and I will mention that we are having leadership meetings. Melissa Cummins, who is the interim director, is holding meetings consistently with the staff. So we're communicating with staff on a consistent basis. Now, whether or not messages are being transmitted throughout the ranks, we are trying our best to make sure that all employees are receiving the same message. Please feel free to forward them to my office, give them my cell phone number and my direct line. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that they have.
Okay. IOC?
We need a motion and
okay.
A...
Okay. We finish it up.
We should have a motion to complete this one. Yes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
And that's the recommended motion?
Yes, this is good.
Thank you.
Motion.
Second. Motion and second, Wendy.
Okay, Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopstaff.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
I guess.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Item C, Supervisor Valenzuela.
This property, I just want to clarify, is this the property that the Forest Service turned back over to the city?
Correct.
Okay, because the city of Dunsbury wanted that piece of property.
Yes, and okay, so as part of this resolution, should the board approve this resolution, okay, we do have to send out notices
right
to local entities,
okay,
government entities, and we will do so, one being the City of Dunsmuir.
Okay, I just want to make sure that, because that was the higher the priorities to acquire that property.
Correct.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that was the cost of the shelter.
And I've been in communication with the City of Dunsmuir.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Of course, thank you.
If there's no further discussion, I'll move to approve.
Motion. Second. Second.
Okay.
Supervisor Kopstaff.
I got it. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopstaff?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. My favorite topic. Item 8A, Health and Human Services, COVID-19 Public Health Division.
We have Dr. Aaron Stetz on the line, who will be presenting this update. So if he'll raise his hand, please.
Dr. Stetz, are you there?
Press *6 to unmute.
About our COVID numbers here. Our active cases today are at 54, which is down by about 20 since yesterday. we're at 2,190 cases, and our total deaths went up by one yesterday to 26. We have currently hospitalized 7 individuals. 4 of those individuals are in the ICU, ICU level care, and our total hospitalized has been 190 for the pandemic. I'll give a little update on our vaccinations. So far we have completely vaccinated about 12,030 residents. That represents about 20% of our population. This is good, but could certainly be better. I think we're lagging behind the vaccination rates of the rest of the state. I think California, on average, is vaccinated about 49% of its residents. So we're definitely behind in that regard, but otherwise, our mass vaccination efforts are proceeding as planned. With other events planned through other entities, including tribal entities and division efforts through CVS pharmacy to school children, which is a new development as of last week. And with that, I'll take any questions that the board has.
Supervisor Chris.
Dr. Stutz, am I correct in saying that supply of the vaccine is not a problem at all?
I would say that's correct. All over the state, there's been an excess amount of vaccine, so flight relief isn't an issue. Okay.
Thank you, Doctor.
Yes, Dr. Stutz, I noticed that our numbers had spiked here within the last couple weeks, and I'm surprised that we haven't moved back to tier. Is the state working with us on that front?
Yeah, so typically we should have moved back a tier, but so all over Northern California, Northern California counties are experiencing a little bit of a surge, and this is in contrast to the rest of the state, which is actually the case numbers have been declining for the rest of the state. So here in some of the northern counties, they've been working with us and doing direct intervention to help mitigate some of our increased numbers that we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks. And for that reason, they've put us into fire arbitration, so we're going to be required for 2 years while they're working with us.
Okay, so and one of the things that I've, in my role at this, as a first vice president for CSAC, is conversing with Dr. Ghali with the small rural working group, I noticed a lot of my rural peers are well ahead in the vaccination rate. Can you give me a good reason why we're not up into the 35-40% here?
Yeah, I don't, I can name some basic factors. I think there's the areas in our county are hard to reach out to. We haven't had full engagement at our mass vaccination clinics over the last couple of weeks. We've had the capacity to vaccinate many more people than have expressed interest and have signed up for those vaccination clinics. So I think there's a lack of demand, a relative lack of demand in our community for the vaccine. That's been something that's, that's consistently pointed out to the state. We need help with convincing members of our community that this is a good idea. I think that's going to most of it, honestly.
Okay, is there any plans to get more vaccination clinics out there instead of once every couple weeks?
Well, I think our schedule in terms of our vaccination clinics that we're putting on through public health, at the rate that they're at now, because even where they're at now, it's a huge undertaking to do a mass vaccination, even every 2 weeks. The good is that there are other entities that are stepping in to help us with this effort. So there's a third party entity out in CERC that has been coming with testing, both offering to election commission clinics in our county. who we've engaged with. I believe there is a vaccination clinic happening at COS on Thursday through that entity. So we do have some help. So there should be vaccination clinic available for anyone who wants it. I really don't think the transient access to vaccination clinics explains our low vaccination rates.
Doctor, is there a mobile unit available for the homeless population now?
Yeah, so we have had that in works for her. This role that exists well. Admin's realized that we have the vaccine available, and this, that's part of our discussions this week, is how to make that happen. We have a mobile unit, and we're also in discussions with this third-party vaccinator who might potentially be able to operate a little remote unit to help us with that effort as well.
And can you speak to the inconsistency with the mask requirements now?
Yeah, that's a good question. The state has come out with this. They came out with a statement a few days ago that they'd like to move to the CDC advice mask guidelines by June 15th. So sometime next month, they intend to follow up on the CDC recommendations. I think that the CDC recommendation under the circumstances are warranted. I think it's probably fine to not wear masks and fully vaccinated. In the last month, I have been rather surprised to have some breaking cases that we've had in the county, even people who are already treated. We had some outbreaks around the county and noticed an uptick in cases in people who are fully vaccinated. Most of these people, I think, have fallen into a certain demographic category. That makes them more likely for the vaccine to not have induced an immune response. It's just elderly people or immunosuppressed people. No, I think that means I think there's like a little bit of caution on, you know, just doing the mask and engaging in whatever activity you feel is safe. We do have cases out there that are breakthrough cases, and some people have become very ill, even after being fully vaccinated. So it just speaks to the fact that I think that we should still use caution. But I also think that, we have to move that direction eventually anyway.
Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Stutz. This is Supervisor Howe. A couple of questions I might have is, I noticed in Oregon, to get the vaccinations up there, having open clinics where you can just go in and get vaccinated. Are we considering anything like that, say like at the public health department or someplace like that, during business hours?
You mean just setting open office hours for running vaccinations on any given weekday? Is that what they're doing up there?
Yeah, because I noticed while visiting Medford area, they're announcing on the radio that anyone can go to the Jackson County Fairgrounds anytime during the day and get a vaccination.
I think that would be great if we had, you know, all the time in the world and the staff to support that. And I think maybe we'll get there at some point where, you know, we'll be able to have maybe once weekly in-office vaccination clinics for community. It sounds like something that might be better done once we're out of this and, you know, quote-unquote emergency situation with COVID, and it's sort of tapered off to a steady state number of cases, and maybe after the emergency declaration is over, sounds like something that would help.
Yeah, I was just looking at ways to make it more convenient rather than having to schedule an entire day to travel in from a remote area in the county, while you might be able to drop by and get that done while you're in town getting other business done.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The other question I have, and you may not know the answer to this, I'm interested in the number of cases that we have circulating in the county today, whether they are the original COVID-19 or whether they're variants?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Because of these breakthrough cases that we had over the last couple of weeks, or over the last month, we've started sequencing all positive cases or setting all positive cases for whole genome sequencing to find out, just get a good sample of what kind of variants we may be dealing with. And we've noticed at least three mutations, so these are individual mutations, not necessarily official variants of concern, but we've noted that there's some mutations in the genome that are prevalent in our community at this time, and we're consistent with mutations that have been noted throughout Northern California. Some of these mutations are thought to contribute to greater transmissibility, as well as worse prognosis, also immune escape for people who are fully vaccinated. So they may be contributing to our increased numbers. I think it likely represents some portion of our increased numbers, proportion of our increased numbers attributed to those mutations, those variants. But as of yet, we've really only sampled a handful of positive cases over the last couple of weeks. So I'm still waiting for the whole genome sequencing results to get a better picture. And the state working with us on this as well. And in addition, has asked for serum testing from individuals who've been exposed to some of these variants, been diagnosed with some of these variants, et cetera, to find out, can they develop an immune response to their vaccine series, and what was the difference between the people who contracted the virus who had been vaccinated or not vaccinated. So that's something I'm looking forward to seeing the data on that. And we have, I think, a number of CPH departments working with us on that. Yeah.
And last question, I get asked this a lot, and I'm puzzled myself. A lot of focus on everybody except for those who have had the virus and recovered from it. There seems to be no data available anywhere of whether or not those individuals are being reinfected, and that would be helpful for the public to know.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, too. So I can tell you, even in our own county, we have noticed a handful of cases of reinfection. I would just guess that number is less than 10 cases that I'm aware of, but it's an older number. And so it's certainly possible, and I think that is probably secondary to a number of factors, possibly these variants that are circulating, but also possibly that the vaccine or that the protection conferred by having had the virus, 6 months ago may not be fully protective of the variant that they're circulating right now. It may also be that the antibodies that patients develop after their first infection are short-lived, as they are with some other viruses that we know about. Sometimes those antibodies, don't stick around for forever. So, it's my thought that we probably are still going to recommend vaccination individuals who've been previously infected with COVID, but also who've received their vaccine, last year or more than a year ago. So I'm not interested in doing vaccine boosters on a yearly basis, probably like we have for influenza.
Okay, thank you. I think that's all from me, and I think that's all from the board this morning. Okay, moving right along. Item 10D, County Council.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I jumped again. Back up. I need my coffee. 8B, Natural Resources Community Development Department.
Good morning, Natalie Lewis, Assistant County Counsel. Today, county staff is bringing forward to the board and the public a presentation by Dr. Laura Foglia about the tools Larry Walker Associates have developed to help the county evaluate potential impacts of proposed new wells in the Scott Valley. And development of this tool is part of the county's efforts towards working to implement the county's public trust duty and making well permitting decisions. Today's agenda item is just informational and is not on the agenda for board action. Staff will come back at a later date with recommendations. And with that, I'll let Matt Parker from our Natural Resources Department introduce Dr. Foglia.
Matt Parker, Natural Resources. On the phone to provide the presentation is Dr. Laura Foglia from Larry Walker and UC Davis. As you know, she's also our lead on our signal work. And with that, I'll turn it over to Laura when everybody's set up.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So, I just want to give you a quick update on the work that actually we did quite a while ago using the groundwater model that has been developed for Scott Valley. It's kind of a demonstration exercise, basically trying to understand how we can use these type of tools for understanding in a better way the potential groundwater pumping impact on stream flow. And we use Scott Valley because the model there, you probably know that by now, it has been under development for many years, and we kind of trust it. Can you go next? So we have been asked to do that because of the desire from the Board of Supervisors to start thinking about how to evaluate the potential impacts of new groundwater wells on surface water resources in general. And we have this tool that I will call in the presentation SBIHM, is the Scott Valley Integrated Hydrological Model that UC Davis and Larry Walker is developing now since more than 10 years. So it's a lot of, there is a lot of work behind this tool. And it's the same tool that we are using for Sigma GSP development. So in this presentation, I just want to highlight some hypothetical scenarios. So we were basically looking at the potential impact from a single hypothetical 6-inch diameter well with a 50 gallon per minute pumping capacity. So we had to start from some numbers. This is what we used, and it's really mainly to show you the concept. Next. I already pretty much said everything about the Scott Valley Integrated Hydrological Model. I think recently, thanks to the GSP work, we have done even more refinement. And it really looks like a tool that can be definitely used for analyzing and investigating this type of hypothetical impacts of groundwater pumping. Next. Why are we looking at this? And I think this is going to be kind of a recurring theme also for GSP development. We are looking at what happens when a well is pumping and eventually is drawing some of the water directly from the river. So basically what happens when a well is pumping not far from the river, but actually even far, the pumping can either increase the infiltration of surface water to the groundwater system, or can reduce exfiltration of groundwater to surface water. And this is generally known as surface water depletion. And when it will come to discussion about Sigma, basically one of the, you will hear a lot of times this term of depletion of interconnected surface water. So depletion is really a function of multiple factors. It includes the proximity to the river, of the well to the river, the pumping rate, the climate, but also the geology. So thanks to the model that we have already have all these factors kind of built in into the tool, and we could use the tool to really understand what the hypothetical impact can be. Next. I will go through these plots very quickly. Typical stream flow Scott River hydrograph, if we take a year from January to December, we have high flows in the winter time. The low flows is really hitting between September and October. There is a lot of variability year to year, depending on wet and dry years. Next. So in wet years, we see something like a general higher flow in the river. And in dry year, the flow is really, really small. And it also can be, the river can be pretty running pretty dry till a little bit later in October. Next. So imagine that we start pumping, and so the mid-April, September is kind of the pumping season. The mid-April is a variable, it's just an approximation, can be a little sooner, a little later, depending on the year. And you can see the dashed red line is showing what can happen when because of the pumping. So we can see a decrease on the summer for low flows and a delay for re-wetting flows. You see that the moment when the curve starts going up again, it's happening a little bit later than without pumping. Next. So basically we are looking at these two factors. We are looking at the decrease of low flows during the pumping season, and next. And we are looking also at the slightly delayed arrival of the rewetting flows. So it's a question of days that we are really discussing a lot even right now, but it might be important to keep it in mind. Next. So how can we use the model to really evaluate this pumping impact on stream flow? This is the USGS Fort Jones gauge over the last period, 1991 to 2010 years, just to give you an example. And it's mostly just to show you the peak variability over time in the same year, across years. It really depends on the type of year we are in. Next. So what we did, evaluate the impact of different durations of pumping. So what we did is we took the integrated Scott Valley model, and we imagined to include a new hypothetical well, those 6 inches and 15 gallons per minute well, every quarter of a mile, and in the entire domain, and then check for each of those hypothetical well what would be the impact on the river. We also look at the timing, so we imagine these hypothetical 50 gallons per minute well pumping from 1991 onward, 2001 onward, 2006 onward, and 2010 and onward. So we just tested if how important is the location, but also the timing of the pumping. Next. So if we concentrate just on the period 2006-2010, I just want to bring up, we just selected 2 years, 2009 and 2010. 2009 was kind of a dry year, and 2010 was a kind of a wet year. Not very wet, but it was much wetter than the previous year. So we use these 2 years as our reference to show you some of the results. Next. So this is the model domain, and really the question is, where in the Scott Valley is a single well pumping 50 gallons per minute most impactful? So in which area can new wells be drilled without really creating any significant impact into the river? Or and when it's really the critical area. Next. So the model is really giving us initial reconnaissance about locations where a hypothetical well would be more or less impactful. It's really hypothetical so far, but at least we can demonstrate how this tool can be used in the future. For sure, there will be need for more refinement, but at least it gives you an idea of how we can use this tool. Next. So, and here, I'm really sorry, there is a typo that I didn't notice. This is the dry year, so it's 2009, not 2010. So what this map shows is we have a 50 gallons per minute well pumping for four seasons in a dry, and these are the results in a dry year like 2010. Next. So the impact it's really widespread because it's following a dry winter. We need to remember that. And the greatest impact is where you see the yellow area. So the yellow area is about 0.1 CFS per CFS of impact on the river. But remember, it's just the impact of one single well. So it looks like if, let's to make it very simple, if you install a new well pumping 50 gallons per minute in the yellow area, you may see an impact on the river of the order of 0.1 CFS. Next. And this is really during a low flow in a dry year, like 2009. If you move away from the yellow area, obviously the impact is much, much less because it takes more time for a well pumping there to really provoke an impact on the river, but it might come in years. The good news is that there is a lot of variability, annual variability, with winter and summer, and we know that the Scott Valley is recharging a lot every winter, so that's why wells that are really very far away from the river may really not have a huge impact right away. Next. So we did the same pumping for 19 seasons, so a much longer time of pumping, and it's not, the difference is not much. And why is this happening? Exactly for what I was saying earlier. Every winter the valley is recharging, and so basically kind of that's killing the signal from the previous pumping. Next. So there is just what you can see is just a slight expansion of the contours along the basin boundary with more years of pumping, but it's really not much. Exactly. Thank you. Next. So now let's move into a normal year. So you see the picture is different. So here we are pumping 50 gallons for five seasons in a normal year, which is the 2010. And we were talking about 2009. Earlier, I'm really sorry for the typo. You see that the yellow area, which is the 0.1 CFS, is now just at the downstream part of the valley, and there is a little bit more greenish area right now. So the impact seems to be in a normal year seems to be a little bit reduced. Next. And so the greatest impact is really along the river near the Fort Jones Gauge. There is a decrease in impact farther from the river and the trip. So there is more purple area that we couldn't see before. Next. And now we do the, okay, and this is just a summary. So the maximum values is really equal to the pumping rate. So 50 gallons per minute is 0.1 CFS. And the impacts is really proportional to the pumping rate. But the spatial distribution does not change much. Next. If we do the same and we pump for 20 seasons in a normal year, again, the picture is not very different. If we go into detail of each single location, we probably can see like little differences here and there, but the general message is the same. Next. And the reason for this really little change is, again, the same that I said earlier. It's how the winter is recharging the valley. Again, most of the differences are really on along the boundaries, so where I put the yellow, the red arrows. Next. So, how does pumping really near disconnected or dry reaches of the river can delay also the rewetting flows from the first rainfall event? And these are just two pictures that we left there for mostly for your information, because we can have both these conditions in the Scott Valley. It's mostly like we are mostly in the upper diagram with the river and the aquifer fully fully connected, but we can also do some, and we are doing that for the GSP actually, some additional analysis on to try to understand what happens when the river is dry during some part of the year. Next. So I can just give you some ideas to conclude, and again, remember that this was kind of an hypothetical example. As expected, we kind of saw the greatest impacts at downstream location close to the river. The impact is really dependent on whether the previous winter was wet or dry. And the number of seasons of pumping likely has only a small impact. The impact on stream flow is proportional to the pumping rate, so the effects of pumping a single well at 50 gallons per minute may be relatively small, but we are talking about a single well, so we need to remember that. So if we look at that, it's less than 2% of the minimum stream flow during dry years. And pumping along dry ridges may lead to delayed rewetting fall flows. Next. So take-home message is really, the tool seems to be very useful for understanding and showing what an hypothetical groundwater pumping impact on the Scott River can look like. And it can be used for more case-by-case in-depth analysis, because obviously if we get some more details of a specific well in a specific location, the model can run again and provide specific results. The model only provides information on hypothetical pumping scenarios so far, and the decision making will really depend on the board assigning specific thresholds on what is acceptable or not. And I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe some questions from the board. If not, I'll start. Well, good morning. I had a couple questions about the model. For me to understand it, I need to understand a few of the variables that you're looking at. One, that was 50 gallons per minute picked. Of the wells I'm aware of, at 6-inch well casings, that's pretty high production in Scott Valley.
It was just to start with something. It's really hypothetical. I think we had some discussion while we were doing it. Actually, we also tried different pumping volume, and I think after discussing with Matt and internally, we just picked one number. So it's absolutely hypothetical.
So does that reflect intermittent use, or is that continuous pumping?
In this case, was a continuous pumping.
Which is, I think you would agree, pretty unrealistic.
Continuous pumping during the irrigation season, not the entire year.
Okay.
So just for those 4 months per year or 3.5 months per year, you know, the model basically changes the starting of the pumping time because it looks at the soil moisture. So every year the model starts the irrigation season on a different day, and so it's for the irrigation season. Sorry, but continuously over the irrigation season.
All right, thank you. Other questions? Supervisor Chris.
No, thank you, Ms. Felogia. It looks like the Scott River basin recharges very well. Is that correct?
Yeah. If the winter is good, yes.
That was my only question. Thank you.
So if I could ask, did you pick a specific location or did you move locations around for the hypothetical testing?
We moved location all over the basin, every quarter of a mile. So basically, we were kind of imagining that there was a new hypothetical well every quarter of a mile all over the valley. But then we analyzed the impact of each single location on the stream flow depletion.
Having done that, did you take into account all the different locations and add that up with the effects, or no?
We didn't add up, but I mean, if in this case it's really the impact of only one single well.
Right. Okay.
So we can add it up by area, but we kind of figured that for now it was easier to just do it all over because it's an hypothetical scenario.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
I think that's all we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we take a break for the next one?
Yeah, I've been informed we're going to take a break.
Just a minute.
Recharge your fingers.
Yes.
So we'll stop for about 5 minutes.